last night.
Oh, my God. Okay,
but they just never could get ahead.
Good morning. Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., January 22nd. And welcome to the Story County Board of Supervisors regularly scheduled meeting. Would you care to, if you so care, to join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We start with public comment number one. And I see Arden Reiner. Hi, I'm wondering when we see you again. Moving to the microphone.
All you got
to
do is put possibility of borrowing some money on the budget. And you're just going,
it's okay.
I've been here for a while.
You need to actually talk into that.
We have a new audio system. And it requires you to get very close to that microphone.
These microphones hanging from the ceiling.
They're speakers.
Anyhow, I'm Arden Greiner from Sherman Township. Two things on the agenda today I want to address. One was possibly talking about borrowing $7 million for a road fund and $3 million for 911 or some crazy. I think only once in the past we borrowed money for the road fund. Traditionally, we haven't. So I hope we don't start that again. I don't know if it's called a balanced budget if you're borrowing $7 million for a road fund. I like to pay as you go myself. The other thing is economic development. The funding of economic development is going to be discussed. So I'm always concerned about the wind towers in Sherman and Lincoln Township. You know, that I call that our economic development. We need that tax base in our school districts. And the county in the past has been pissing that and spending the money in other areas of the county. Economic development's real hard to do fairly. There's always winners and losers. Some of the cities, especially Huxley, they're tipping like crazy. I mean, I think it's $800 per every man, woman, and child in Huxley. They're retaining that much money and not letting it go to the budget, the county budget. So I hate to see them tipping the wind towers and spending money like for parks and things on the other side of the county. So that's my comment this morning. Mr. Short.
Thank you.
Thanks, Art.
Just want to comment back. I thank you for continuing to have the persistence of the people on coming. And you, in the last, 17 years now, I've been here and, you know, involved in some way with the board. And you are right. There was one borrowing of money for roads. It was when the county was very tight on money. This was a lot of criticism of that. I think even that Supervisor Sanders was very critical of that. We're looking at options based upon what we have and accelerated a couple of roads that we need sooner. And that's where we get that money from, as opposed to some kind of an emergency situation where do we have to bond to get some roads fixed. Just so you understand that. But I thank you for standing up once again. Thank you. Okay. Seeing no one else, move to the microphone. We'll go ahead and we'll move on to item number 4, which is the Veterans Affairs Quarterly Report. Good morning, Brett.
Hey, good morning. All right. I gave each of you a copy of what I call my monthly report. I give that monthly to the commission. But you have Veterans Affairs Office data for about 18 months there in front of you, including the budget. Kind of what that started at is the commission.
Brett, unfortunately, I'm going to have to ask you that. I know. People want to get through.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of where that started is the commission wanted something, you know, short and sweet with a lot of numbers on it. So, I don't know if anybody has any questions on that, but let me know if you do. Going on with the quarterly report, covering, this is October the 1st, 2018 to December 31st, 2018. Greetings from the commission, Veterans Affairs. Three families came in for burial assistance during the quarter. That amounted to $5,862. Two veterans came in for rent assistance. The value of that, $1,155. And then one veteran came in for medical assistance, $493.50. So a grand total for the quarter was $7,510.60 of county assistance to veterans. However, during the quarter, we interviewed 372 veterans and surviving spouses for eligibility for federal, state, and county VA benefits, with an average of 124 per month. Kind of the breakdown of that 372 is 311 men, 61 women, 52 World War II veterans, 52 Korea, 99 who served during the Vietnam War, 53 who served during First and Gulf War, 32 during peacetime or Cold War, 31 who served in Iraq or Afghanistan, and then also we've seen 53 surviving spouses. Outreach during the quarter was our annual supermarket. I think this has been going on 16 or 17 years now. I lost count. We switched our location this time to the Flex. The 125 veterans found us and came that day. Just kind of a recap, I mean, we had did 43 haircuts that day. DOD clothing, boots, handed out. Also did claims and enrolled veterans in healthcare benefits. Our new kind of a pilot program started the day after the supermarket. I started right here in Nevada at City Hall, setting up a table for the morning. And so for the quarter, from that point on anyway, I went to Nevada, Zeering, Roland, Story City, Slater, and Huxley. And in all those towns, seeing 16 people I wouldn't normally see. I've been in the office. And then also January the 9th, going out a little bit further, Gilbert and McCallsburg, I seen 4 in Gilbert and 6 in McCallsburg. So it seemed to be working pretty good. Another thing I kind of added on to this is tell me a little bit about the GDX, where we're at with that geographic, and that's a geographical distribution of VA expenditures. Kind of threw this on here with Linda being new on the board just to give her a snapshot. And there are a few fiscal years behind. Most recent data I have is fiscal year 17. And fiscal year 17, we had $24.2 million in benefits coming to Story County veterans and surviving spouses.
Thank you. So I don't see this on my agenda. Or
this information? Just kind of an add-on. I just thought,
thank you.
For Linda, because with Linda being new on the board, I just wanted to do this. And then FY16, $21.8 million. So you can kind of see the increases there on those two. The last thing I have is Veterans Day is at the Capitol tomorrow. I've got a van going and hauling veterans down there. Hopefully we have a good turnout.
Outstanding.
That's all I have. Words. Any questions for me?
Questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Yep.
I just wonder when I see the numbers. If sometimes you're seeing people over and over again because they have multiple needs and needs change, so does that happen sometimes where you're seeing?
Probably pretty rare that I see somebody once, just one time.
Okay.
It usually leads to another meeting, just because it's so much that we have to pull together in developing. The odds of a veteran walking in have everything I need, medical documents and everything for developing, you know. So it's usually the first meeting is, here's the process, here's what we need to do. It might be a short meeting, maybe 30 minutes or so going over everything. And then let's set another one, let's find these med docs and track down all the information we need to move forward with the VA. So
the question was, if you have the contacts with people.
No.
I count them every time.
Right, you count them every time.
Every time, yeah.
In the past, Brett reported about 4,100 veterans and story counts of deaths, right?
My mind here is pointing.
So I just wanted to kind of make the point that these, it's not an easy in and out. You develop a real kind of caseworker almost situation.
Yeah, what's interesting, I mean, our population in FY16 was 5,561, and it dropped by a little over 1,300. Right now it's 4,174. But what was interesting, I can't explain it, benefits went up over $2 million, and we lost that one somehow.
You're being thorough.
Only two ways out of county that I know of is move and pass away, so... So, to keep that, the dollars coming in, when we lose somebody that was 100%, we got 62 of those folks. It takes quite a bit to make that money, make that back up. When we're looking at several months from start to finish on a claim, even if you had one today, it takes several months to get that through, so.
So the vicinity map here
located on the western edge of Howard Township, just south of Story City, and on the west side of I-35. The subject property again is about 0.85 miles south of Story City. The land use within a half mile of the subject property of approximately 89% is in agricultural and natural area, and then about 11% is residential. Zooming in a little bit, the subject property is highlighted in the thicker yellow there. We do have the Royal Orchard Estate subdivision to the northwest of the subject property, and then the Woodhaven Estate subdivision to the west. The property on the very west edge, adjacent on the western side, is owned by Story County Conservation, and we'll get to that in just a minute here. We are on the west side of I-35 and on the south side of 130th. I can talk about the zoning in the vicinity. Subject property. Again, the area requested for the rezoning is about 1 acre, and it's designated there in red. It's the northern acre of the property. We do have, this property does take access through the Story County Conservation property. It's a shared access for the conservative trailhead off of 130th Street. There's a trail that does extend onto this private property, and currently Mike Cox, the Story County Conservation Director, has drafted easement language to get this access on this property in writing officially. So they are working on that at this time. Zooming in a little bit, you can see the access easement highlighted in yellow on the subject property. The existing building will be used for the proposed use, and the parking area will be added like on the north side of the building. Access in terms of trucks or deliveries come along the north side of the property and to the overhead door on the east edge. Again, about 1 acre, the rezoning request and the CGC future land use map amendment is about 1 acre on the northern 200 feet of the property. Just some background, Prairie Vineyards acquired the property in 2005. Since that time, Prairie Vineyards has established approximately 7 acres in grapes, fine production for sale and future production. Currently, the applicant sells grapes to nearby wineries and other winemakers. In 2015, an agricultural exemption was applied for and issued for the construction of the existing accessory structure, which is about 1,600 square feet. There's utilities and on-site sewage treatment for this property. With the proposed change of use for the site, a zoning permit for the accessory structure is required. So the building does not meet the 50-foot front setback requirement, and therefore a variance was required. The Story County Board of Adjustment did approve that variance request last week. So according to the applicant, in order to obtain a Class A native winery permit from the state of Iowa, which would allow the applicant to wholesale market the wine from the subject property, the zoning of the property must be amended to allow for the processing of grapes and storage and wholesale of wine. So these uses are consistent with principles for any uses of the H. The A2 district is intended and designed to provide or to be strongly interrelated with agricultural uses and are better located in an agricultural setting than in a more urban setting. The lease of score for the subject property is 225. We do have the requirement that the Lisa must be less than 267 for a rezoning request. Looking at the adjacent zoning, immediately to the west of the subject property, there is the Greenbelt Conservation District. To the northeast, we have R1 Transitional Residential District. And the subject property is zoned A1, as is the property on the east side of I-35 and directly north of the property. Looking at the C2C commercial industrial area definition, this designation supports long-term planning objective of accommodating future demand for types of commercial industrial growth that are best located in that rural area. Looking at the C2C future land use map, it is currently designated primarily agricultural conservation area. There is some natural area on the site, although the area requested to be rezoned is not included in that natural area. So after obtaining this Class A native winery permit, the applicant anticipates marketing wine to local distributors such as Hy-Vee and Cyclone Liquors. It's anticipated that between 5,000 and 7,000 bottles will be distributed each year, and that 1 to 2 part-time employees, in addition to the owner, will be required for the harvesting, processing, and distribution of the wine. Also, 5,000 to 7,000bottles of wine, somewhere between 500 and 1,200 bottles of wine are anticipated to be processed and bottled on the subject property itself. The applicant does have a custom crush arrangement with Closer Creek Winery in Fort Dodge, and they process and bottle larger quantities of wine of the grapes grown on the site. So on-site, the processing equipment will be housed in the existing accessory structure, same with the storage of the wine. The applicant anticipates supply deliveries and wine pickup will be done would be completed with pickup trucks or vans, and will occur approximately once per week. Soldier Creek may deliver the wine bottles through their custom crush arrangement once or twice per year. So the delivery traffic won't be a huge increase to the traffic on the site. Again, the delivery traffic would travel along the north side of the property, north of the accessory structure to the concrete pad located on the east end of the building. The site does have security cameras near the entrance and in the interior of the building. So the site plan provided by the applicant, the overhead door is located on the east end of the building. There's wine tanks and storage in the northeast corner, and then the winemaking equipment is stored in the northwest corner. The winemaking equipment does come into the center when it's being used, but it's stored in that northwest corner.
And if I remember the map that showed us earlier, there is no one surrounding. There's no one next door to necessarily care where things are coming in or stored, correct?
Correct, yes. Okay. So it's on the two sides, I-35 on the east side, and then Storage Lake Conservation on the west.
Thank you.
So here's some site photos. This is looking west along 130th Street from the shared access to Storage Lake Conservation. This is looking north across 130th Street, and then east along 130th Street. Looking southeast at the shared access, and this is the parking area, the trailhead of the Storage Lake Conservation property. And this is looking east along that access easement. This is looking east at the existing building, the building to be used for the proposed use. This is looking north from the subject property across 130th Street. And this is looking east along the north side of the building toward I-35 of the I-35 southbound ramp right there.
Did you have a picture looking west?
I do momentarily.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, it's frozen. I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, this is looking southwest at the existing building.
Sorry,
you may or may not get it.
Okay, it's really funny.
Can you send it?
walk quickly through the rest of it.
Absolutely, yep. So, in terms of the rezoning standards for approval, the proposed rezoning shall conform with the Story County Development, Story County T2C land use plan, and the compatibility matrix indicates that the A2 district is compatible with both the agricultural conservation area and the commercial industrial area. The A2 district is adjacent to A1 to the south and to the west on the east side of I-35, but then immediately adjacent to the Greenbelt Conservation District to the west. The C2C, the Future Land Use Map, does designate the Royal Orchard State subdivision as rural residential, but the access to this is to the north side. The proposed rezoning, the second item, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district. The proposed use of the property does align with the rezoning of the property. Grape processing is strongly interrelated with vineyards and best located adjacent to that use. The lease of property, the lease is for, again, 225 and therefore eligible for a rezoning request.
So are we, I saw that you guys were recommending chapters of the recommendation.
Yeah. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended.
Yep, the commission, I can just skip that. So at the January 2nd meeting, the Troy County Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the PGC Future Land Use Map Amendment and the rezoning. With the following conditions, the applicant shall continue to work with environmental health staff to determine water usage and complete any necessary upgrades for the septic system. And then the second one is a commercial site plan sketch including an area for required parking shall be submitted to the development department for approval by the board supervisor. So we would ask for two motions today, one for Resolution 1950, which is the C2C Future Land Use Map Amendment, and then Ordinance 281, which is the rezoning request. The applicant is here if you have any questions.
Thank you. Would the applicant like to make a short statement before we open the public hearing? Can you hear the applicant, sir?
Sure. We don't have to.
Yeah,
we're
going
to
probably forget
to give
up
for
dinner for a minute.
Okay, thank you. I'm John Marinowski, the owner of Prairie Vineyards and also Red Barn Gardens. This whole project began as a dream. Probably some people would say it was a silly dream on my part, but I visited out in California for a little bit in 2000 after I sat down as chair in the economics department at Iowa State and toured some of the wineries out in Sonoma and Napa County and thought, you know, I'd really like to see if I can grow good wine in Iowa or produce good grapes and go buy more fine quality ones in Iowa. And I had planned on actually, I planted grapes starting in 2005, and I think the last ones were planted probably about 2010 or 11. So they're mature now, they're producing a full quantity, and I spent a lot of time trying to produce good grapes because I knew to make good wine, you're going to have good grapes. And so I found out a lot of things the hard way in terms of experimenting in Iowa. And I've never been that impressed with most wines produced in the state. They don't have a long enough shelf life, in my mind, and they don't come up to what I would consider good wine for the most part. There are some exceptions, definitely, but I just wanted to see what I could do. And, you know, as an economic professor, I should have probably known better than you to take this challenge on. But I'm a dreamer, and I kind of like to think of, you know, if I can do something here. And I bought a piece of property simply because it had the characteristics that I really want. for growing grapes. One was that it's not very good soil. You don't want very high fertility soil because then you'll produce a bunch of vines.
And sir, I'm going to ask you to move along a little bit.
Okay.
Let's go to the property.
Anyway, going to the property, when I built the barn, I meant to set it back 50 feet from the fence. But we couldn't get a very good reading on where the property line was. At the time, I had one of the individuals in the planning office show me about where the property line would be, the drawing. I didn't end up getting the 50 feet back I wanted to or intended to. And I only did a 50 feet setback at the time because I thought it was a very important part of if I wanted to sell the property in the future, that the building could be used, rezoned, and used for commercial purposes. I didn't know how this was all going to work out in the process. I had an opportunity when I started to get a custom crush arrangement with Soldier Creek Winery. They've got an excellent young winemaker there, and she asked me if I was interested, because to go the next step in processing, I really need better equipment. And so I'm looking at another $50,000 of equipment for use for a month at the most. So that's why I got into the custom crush arrangement. But for smaller quantities, I'm going to do that at the building itself. I have a TTV permit since 2017, and so I'm set up to do it, but I can't do it as well as I'd like because of the size.
So if I might, here, you're all ready to go. Right, and you just need us to rezone.
I just need it.
Okay.
Permit yourself.
Okay.
And so all I'm trying right now is to get a wholesale permit. And to be honest with you, I didn't realize I was going to have to come back, get the place rezoned. I thought, while talking to people in other counties around about wineries, this is very uncommon that I've got to do that. And to sell and so forth, it's got to be answered. That's all I'm requesting here. So I can get started selling. I have wine ready to sell, but I can't sell.
Let's see what we can do for you today, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry to be long winded.
Okay. I do have one question.
Yeah.
Have you been contacted by any of the neighbors around there? Because there are some residential areas, not immediately adjacent, but close by. Have any neighbors contacted you with any comments or concerns?
One woman showed up at the hearing, I think it was the end of December, the first of part of January, and she said she was concerned about traffic. My response to that is, if I want to go with more of an event center type of thing or wine tasting area, then I'm planning on coming back to the board, but I'm waiting to see how some heart surgery comes up next month at Mayo, and so I didn't want to dig into this too deeply to start. Otherwise, I would have gone right from the start. And with what I'm asking for here, I see no increase in traffic at all. I'm up the barn 5 days a week. Normally, sometimes my wife thinks I'm there all the time, but so I'm going out. So if I was wholesaling or delivering to liquor stores, IVs and so forth, I just load some up on the way home and take care of delivery in that fashion. This will create absolutely no increase in traffic or usage, and I'm prepared if I go the next step to address that as well.
So this current step here, you will not have a retail operation at the barn. You will simply be delivering. Somebody from Fort Dodge will come and pick up a large load of grapes sometime, and they will probably, I'm assuming, come down
I-35. I haul the grapes to Fort Dodge.
You will haul the grapes.
So I've been doing that for the last 2 years now in the process.
Okay.
I've had wine ready to sell since last summer, but I can't sell it until I get this lined up so I can go to the state of Iowa, ABD, and get what's called a Class A native wine permit.
So to kind of summarize, with what you're asking us to do today, you do not perceive that there will be any more traffic there or anything significant. However, you may come back through the process later with a proposal that might increase traffic.
That's correct.
Okay, but all we're dealing with today is current.
I just want to be able to hold this. That's all I'm trying to do.
Okay.
Now, if I wanted to modify things in the barn and so forth, I've got to go back to the PTV, which is the federal committee, and show what I want to do, where I'm going to do it, and that I can protect the wine because they're very interested in their revenue. And so that's why I've got a security system on there and everything. It's basically a requirement of the PTV or taxation. I don't know what all those things.
So that's a step beyond us.
Yeah, right.
I have no further questions.
Yeah, thank you. I don't, so I think it's time to open the public hearing.
Okay.
Right? So the public hearing is now open. Does anyone wish to speak to this new application? Gentlemen in the back, please come up. And as you've probably already heard a couple of times, get very close to the microphone, please. And start with your name and where you live.
Hi, I'm Pete Jacob. I live in the Royal Orchard Estate across the road from there. And I have no financial ties or anything listening to Mayor Malky, but I just want to say that he's been an incredibly good neighbor, put a beautiful building. He keeps the property maintained real well. I would totally welcome him there, and I think I can speak for our neighbors too that I've never heard a negative thing about it. And as far as traffic, I really don't see that as any issue even down the road if he went on with the next step. Because all that traffic goes to the south, does not go past Royal Orchard Drive or anything. So I really don't think traffic would be an issue. I'm not concerned about it at all. I think it would be great for Story County to have a vineyard winery there. So I just want to say I totally welcome him, and that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deacon. Anyone else who cares to speak at the public hearing? In that case, we're going to close the public hearing, and so you can go ahead and take your seats if you prefer. Okay. And I turn back to the board for a motion or discussion.
Yeah, so I move adoption of resolution 19-6.
Okay. Second to that. Any more discussion?
The last question is, are we amending, is this the one that's amending the CGC?
Correct, yep.
How, are we simply amending it for the land that the applicant is wanting to use, or are we amending it for a much larger portion?
It's just that northern 1 acre.
Just the 1 acre?
Yep.
Okay, because I think that some people might have looked at commercial and industrial and said, oh my gosh, what's going to happen here? So if they're reassured, it's just this acre for this specific use.
It's this acre.
This acre. It could be used, however, for a different use in the future.
Yeah.
Any use that would be permitted in the
acre. Any use permitted. Thank you.
I'm going to turn back to Supervisor Sanders. And were you moving for the approval of first consideration?
The resolution doesn't need anything else. So that would be when we get to the ordinance.
Okay. Thank you.
We can just move the resolution and then we'll move on to the ordinance.
Sounds good. All right. Supervisor Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Now we're going to move on to the resolution.
The ordinance.
The ordinance.
So now I would like to move approval
of
ordinance 281 and set second reading for next Tuesday, January 29th.
Staff is recommending two conditions with that.
Yeah, so my intention is to adopt the ordinance with the conditions.
With the conditions, okay.
That those are supported by the planning.
Okay. I'll second that.
All right. Any discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. You have your three zone in your map, and then the first reading, you'll have to come back, or they'll be reading.
And if I could, I would ask that you guys consider whether it would be appropriate for us to think about waiving the third reading next week and just talk to us about that.
Sure. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All right. Now, Lisa Markley, thank you for being patient here. It's no point how long it would be. And I originally had started to ask that she'll drop about this item, but they said since you submitted it to ask you. And the item, once again, is consideration of subcontract agreement with YSS, the Substance Abuse Services for fiscal year 19. So my question on it is, I look at the top of this, and I see that this contract began, it says, of July 1, 2018. But yet it's just coming to us now. So do you know why it's coming to us now, almost 7 months into it?
I do.
Okay.
This contract has been ongoing. We've had this contract with IDPH, YSS, run through the court for as long as I've been around, so that's a long time, 27 years. It's a $10,000 a year substance abuse grant. YSS is subcontracted for these services for as long as I can remember. I think it was maybe staff turnover over there. When I went to draw down the first quarter in October, November, I went to draw down the first quarter, and IDPH came back and said, we don't have subcontractors. So I contacted YSS and said, we need subcontractors here before we can continue on with this grant, we need dollars. So that's where we stand. No dollars have been gone through the grant at this point in time because we don't have a subcontract agreement approved by IDPH. So that's what this is for.
Okay. So how many years did we go back not having an agreement with YSS?
We have an annual agreement. It gets done every year. When the grant got applied for, which is due, I think you guys approved the actual application of the grant back in, I want to say probably June or July, which is typical.
Mm-hmm.
The documentation for the sub-agreement, subcontract, didn't get included in that grant application, which is done through YSS.
Okay. And so my second question that I think I am going to Ms. Schildorf, okay, is my second question is, who on our staff would be responsible for seeing that we have a signed document?
The grant application is that we are total pass-through on this. We have no...
I understand that.
We have no, besides applying for the dollars quarterly,
mm-hmm.
and running them through. So the ID, we get the dollars, we forward the dollars to YSS. When they come through, we will forward them right to them. So grant applications of this sort that are run by the, applied for by YSS would not have any reason for us to follow up, except for when they want to draw down funds and they don't have the correct documentation.
Okay, and that's, I'm stuck there. We've got to have a point of contact. So are you the only point of contact, or at some point is community services involved?
No.
Is this through asset?
No.
Nobody. Okay. So
the board approves applying for the contract every year when YSS comes and says we want to continue this grant. And will the board continue to be the avenue to do it? Like I said, it's gone through the juvenile court budget for years and years and years. That did get changed in FY20's budget when we put 20's budget together. We moved it to countywide services. But that was merely a place for it all these years. No, the grant applicant is YSS. The approver is State of Iowa IDPH, and they have to have a fiscal county contact. I look at this merely as a documentation situation that didn't get done when it was supposed to get done.
So here is what has partially caught my eye, and it has to do with one of the boards I sit on, an outside board. But the Iowa Department of Public Health has altered how it's awarding its grants for comprehensive substance abuse prevention. So I don't know what the start date is of the new one, but it I believe that this grant would no longer be something that YSS could apply for. And that has to do with they redesigned everything with this new bidding year coming up. And like I said, I don't know if it was a calendar or a physical on it. But so another agency got the entire huge grant. It used to be cut off, I think, what there was, YSS could apply separately. And they did. And so that's one of my concerns, okay, is that we not just automatically start passing on and saying, oh, this is a yearly grant. And
I just want to know. I'm saying, okay, you guys approved this grant back in June to apply for it. Via YSS, Jerry Lund brought, sent you the documentation and put it on the agenda for you to approve it. This is a matter of this documentation didn't get done to IDPH's satisfaction in order for them to process any funds. And the grant was applied for and the grant was approved apparently because I was able to try to draw down dollars. I just couldn't draw them down until the subcontract got done.
So the concern is, was our auditor's office going to automatically do an agreement next year without knowing if there was a grant approval or other kind of doubt that?
Well, that's part of it.
Part of it is that, we don't have a
contract or did for 7 months and it's when you caught it dead, and that's when you caught it. Yes, part of my concern is wait, are we going
to
automatically?
If somebody comes to you, if Jerry comes to you and says, We want the county to be the applicant for this, which is how this works, this specific grant works, then you say no. I mean,
well, but at the time, like I said, and for last year, they may have qualified for it. I'm concerned that it's falling on the board of supervisors, it sounds like, to be that person internally that's not catching this. And that's why I asked if community services or the asset team or anything was involved in this, because it doesn't sound like we've got a true good watchdog or excuse me, let me come on back here. I meant that to rely upon the board to know the status of a Iowa Public Health grant, it was just hit or miss a little bit, all right? So I'm sorry.
So if I may.
Yeah.
So two separate issues that I think you're talking about. The issue that you're talking about going forward, YSS may not qualify to apply for this grant. And even if they do qualify, this board may choose to not sign off on the idea of this grant. That's going forward. Going backwards, YSS did in fact encourage or ask the board and we approved applying for this grant. We did in fact receive the grant. There is no oversight that needs to happen. All that happens is when the money comes in, Lisa, the auditor's office takes the money that comes in and it forwards it on to YSS, who is providing the services.
So YSS submits to the auditor's office the request for payment. The auditor's office goes online and says, this is how much we need. We verify the documentation. The money gets sent, we send it off. That's how it works. That's how between 7 and 8 grants that I do work, you approve them. I'm the fiscal agent for the Board of Supervisors. And unless all of the required documents are there, I'm on the line if we do not have all the documents that we need in order to approve, to apply for and send the money out.
YSS is the party that's going to notice if there's a problem. If there's a problem, because they're the ones who want the money.
Correct.
And there's a fail-safe, it sounds like, because when you contacted IDPH, they said there's not a subcontract. So I would bet that when we get back to YSS on that, or when they hear there was discussion about this, they'll put a note on the calendar to make sure to get the subcontract if they get the grant next year.
Wonderful.
To get the subcontract to you, and if not, there's a fail-safe. I don't think no money can go.
No money can be, no money can be requested and or dispersed until all of their documentation is in line down there.
So the state is serving as that overseer. Now, my next question has to do with what's in there. I was confused. You say it's a grant for $10,000. What's the reference to $40,000 in there?
So it's a $40,000. It's a $30,000 match. So YSS matches $30,000
to get 10.
Right. To get 10.
Thank you.
And they can only draw down, it's 25%. So they submit 100% of their expenses. We draw down 25% as they incur them, but it's a quarterly drawdown.
For all the grants you were talking about, you have several. Are they all with YSS?
No.
Okay.
That's, I think I only have two.
The
I have sheriff's office. I have
if you're wondering if the procedures are the same, I would imagine the procedures are different depending upon the funding source.
Okay, but I'd like to kind of verify. Not today, but kind of have a report in the future coming back, just verifying about what are those procedures for each of the grants you have, or group of grants, okay, depending on, like, supervisor set the funding sources. I just, as I said, I probably wouldn't even have caught anything but why are we signing the contract 7 months after it went into force if I hadn't known about the others. So thank you for the time for explaining that, okay?
And this is all of our grants that we are involved in or draw down on are audited every year by our state auditors.
Okay. All right, thank you.
The only thing I was going to add, I'll follow up with YSS to see if this is even a grant opportunity for them, because this is the grant that we have before you today is for fiscal year 19, so it's the current year.
Right.
And then I know through the asset process, they were requesting some additional funds as a loss of what happened with IDPH and how they have reorganized providing dollars. I don't know if this was impacted or not, this particular grant, but I'll follow up.
Okay, thank you. And we, after the volunteers for asset, I think the recommendations, it'll be coming to us then, correct? They'll approve the funding, so we can discuss then about duplication of services and family.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Ready for motion?
I am.
I would move approval of the subcontract agreement with YSS for substitute services for FY19.
Second.
Okay.
Morgan?
Yes.
Standard?
Aye.
Wilson? Aye. Okay. Now we are ready to move on. And we're at item 10, number 1, discussion and consideration of amendment number 1 to the 2080 agreement for intergovernmental agreement for combined law enforcement investigations of controlled substances. Hello. Good morning, Ethan Anderson.
Good morning. Thank you. Ethan Anderson, the County Attorney's Office. This is the drug task force. And so Boone left it at one point. Now they want back in. So we'd like to have them back on the task force to partner with us. And we have the same EPA task force that says any amendments must be signed off on by all members. So that's unanimous. So I think we've got IFU signature on there. We've got Boone's on there. We've got E's. Last signatures for the Spur County Sheriff. And tons of work. So that that's only more detail than that, but we just want to have Boone back to task force.
Okay. Questions?
I would move that we adopt amendment number 1 to this 2080 and have them back here.
Second. Any further discussion? Supervisor Sanders?
Aye.
Supervisor Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Thank you. Thanks for traveling over this way. Be careful going down.
You still got one.
Yeah, what's we
doing? Okay. Oh, sure. Okay. So now we're going to move to the social media working group. And
did we say economic development?
Sorry about that. Okay.
All right, yes, okay. So discussion and consideration of economic development programming and funding priorities for fiscal year 2020. And I put this as a, just really on as an initial conversation headed into our budget workshop on Friday morning, which is when we would be looking at identifying possible sources of funding and dollar amount is available. So, but my thought is there's a lot of asks that we either have started to get or out of hints about asks that may be coming for economic funding priorities, or what was brought to us late in December, I just thought that we should discuss kind of priorities. So I made a list of what kind of the, what has happened in the past, at least from my short reference here on the board. So we have the facade grant, which is an economic development program. We have the urban renewal grant for 2,000 communities with 2,000 and fewer populations that we've done, the board has done several times in the past. Okay, we have the ask at the or the suggestion at the end of last year that we look at grant matches, funding grant matches for the communities. Now, what was put in front of us was funded for all. There had been, I believe, some discussion among the economic development consultants themselves that we have the AEDC about doing matches for mid-sized cities. That was reinforced with the Burke situation where there was a possibility they were going to come back to town. We have a rural and workforce pilot program that might be activated in the future. I had my housing pilot program on there, and then I just, that was my list, but there would be other possibilities, and Dustin Ingram is here, and in a brief conversation with Dustin, who, of course, is our consultant through the AEDC to work with smaller communities, he's aware of a couple of the communities who are hoping to look for some money from Story County this year. So I felt this was a time just to feel out priorities and plus what we already know about our budget this year. So I'll open it up to discussion, or would you like to hear from Dustin first? Dustin, you want to come up and tell you what the towns have been telling you?
Sure, I can share a few words.
Okay, thank you.
And so I can't really speak for all the communities themselves. They'll have to flesh out the details of their applications before they submit them to you. But I am aware of at least one community that may submit an application for a project, a business development project in downtown. That would result in high school jobs, little jobs on site in that community. But I really don't want to speak for them until they're ready to proceed with an application. I will say that on the urban renewal plan that you have, several of the projects that predate my time here as your consultant, but several of those projects seem to be catalytic in nature as well. And so you funded some projects that have led to other developments in the downtown or in the in business development. I think of one in particular, Collins, right? So Collins has received funding from the County Sports Wellness Center. They've also been extremely aggressive about downtown development. And in the past year alone, we've seen four new businesses in the downtown, and that's a town of only 500 people. We've seen the same thing in Zering with the project from Bank Building. Now there's a medical clinic downtown. And so even though they're working on these projects, they build confidence and momentum to proceed in other areas. And so if I'm providing any input for you, I would just say to keep in mind, number one, flexibility for the types of applications that could come in, and allowing the communities in a way to define what their economic development priorities are, and also just think of the catalytic nature that some of these projects come with.
That's fair.
Okay,
sure.
So if I could, Morris, I would just say it seems to me that it's completely appropriate right now to have a little more of a philosophical conversation, and I think that's what I hear
you
getting.
Correct.
And where the county has been over the last, what we've been for that. So where the county was prior to 2010 was not a whole lot of involvement in anything economic development outside of letters of support and participating in what I would call one-off kind of projects, right? So there was a a swimming pool in Story City. And there was the county, Ada Hayden left, that the county contributed some funds on a project-specific kind of deal. Then starting in 2010, the board went to a philosophy of let's try to help our towns, especially our smaller towns, but not exclusively our smaller towns. Let's try to help our towns help themselves, and let's let it be known that we want to be an active participant in whatever they might be doing to redevelop downtown or drive economic activity in their town. We don't want to be the primary player, but we'd like to be a player. And that's where it's remained over the last 8 years. And now with a new board, I think it's completely appropriate to talk through, is that the philosophy we want to have going forward, and do we want to add to that philosophy things like housing and transportation that philosophically the county really has not been a leader in, or do we want to redo that whole philosophy? So.
Right. I think that's a good summary, and thank you for kind of the quick recap. And I'd like to know that our special projects manager and outreach manager, Leanne Harder, did offer to come and present to us excellent PowerPoint she did a few years ago about kind of the history, or maybe it was a year ago, the history of our economic development growth. We decided with time limits and everything going on that we probably would be able to enjoy that, but I definitely encourage Dustin, if you haven't seen it yet, and Supervisor Merkin, if you haven't seen it yet, then you can book privately with her, because it's an excellent recap. So, okay, so moving forward here, what is going to be our philosophy, especially given the budget we're discussing here, and we're looking at for the next couple of years with some in-house needs that are higher ticket items, and the fact that we heard from Bruce Barclay, welcome back, a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, about that the money that we are taking from the turbines, the tax money, is being used right now to pay for debt, to pay down debt. Is that not still correct?
50% of it.
Pardon?
The 50% you're taking, almost all of it is, yeah.
Right. The 50% of the total of the almost $2 million a year in yields and taxes. So there's not that fund, if I understand this correctly, there is not that fund that has previously existed that allows for the urban renewal grant. There's not that big $300,000 or whatever that came in as cash or reallocated as cash every year. That is correct, and seems or not. Because some projects are not going to be able to be funded even because we are using our share of what's coming from the TIF to pay down debt.
No projects that we've approved are not able to be funded. We just haven't approved any new projects.
Correct.
Unless there was funding available to approve those projects, which is why we didn't do it last year. And we've still... So I completely agree with you that there's not the, I think $260,000 is kind of the number that I remember that had been available for some of these projects. There's not that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's absolutely zero. That's different than what our philosophy is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what I'll remind you guys of is the little bit that the county has been able to do to help some of our smaller communities has impacted major projects. And you think of what Dustin mentioned, both Zeering and Collins, but I think of Cambridge and how that looks entirely different with a little bit of support from the county, lion's share from the city, and I would hope that we would continue to want to help our communities help themselves.
So I would have a question. The 260,000 available the previous years or maybe last year, is that the number you recollect?
It has varied depending on how much debt has been incurred.
Right.
One year there's $273,000 worth of projects. One year there was 273, one year there was 359. It varies depending on how much debt there is and what the revenue projections are, because unfortunately all we can do is assume what's going to happen for revenues for TIF, because of the levy rates don't get set until obviously soon.
Mm-hmm.
without that knowledge, you don't have a ballpark?
I think what I'm going to probably tell you guys next week is, or later this week when we talk, is 100,000 might be available this year. 100 or 110?
Thank you.
So back then to the philosophical part, all right, is that where would we even, you know, where are we likely to want to maybe put some economic funding toward? Is it small grants that seem to get multiplied in the smaller communities? And I'm thinking of the facade grants, for one. I mean, there's a maximum of, I think, 10,000. I can't give me a decision, not even not.
But the funding for the facade grant has never come out of the
fund. It's a general fund.
No, the facade grant comes out of your rural fund, out of your local option sales tax, 40%.
Okay, so as though from economic development fund overall, is that something that we want as a board to continue? Is that a philosophical thought? I'm going to re-summarize it the way I look at it. It's a small amount of money that seems to give back a good rate of return in moving a community forward, feeling good about a redo of the front of a building or painting, in Collins, painting buildings different bright colors to create an atmosphere.
Yeah, so I agree with you specifically about the facade grant, but I'll take it one step further to other types of projects that could potentially occur in our small towns. Because I think the potential value to us is not only the small amount of money that we might put into a project like this, it is changing the mindset of our small towns and having them think about what's possible, what they could do, what kind of projects might impact the downtown. And to me, even more than the dollars that we might have available, it is encouraging our small towns, especially small towns, but all our towns, to think outside the box and think of what's possible. And so I would hope that we would not just close the door on the possibility of requests coming to us. It doesn't mean we ever have to say yes to a request. We can always say no. But I think there is real value in having Dustin work with the small towns to put together a request, because now they're seeing a building or a business or something differently than they've seen it before. And, Lawrence, that's where I think the potential value is in all this.
Okay.
All right. So let's say we have 100,000 next year. Would we set that up like we have, has happened in past years, that there's a deadline for grants, for grant requests to come to us? So we would know what all is out there rather than spending, you know, maybe spending that $100,000 in July and then somebody comes up October with a need. It's really a need. We wish we had plenty of funds.
And can I clarify before I see Leah Carter coming forward? Okay, because with that, are you making the assumption the whole $100,000 would go to one priority, which would be the facade grant? Or if we were to step away from the dollar amount,
I thought it was the facade grant and the separate source of
funds. Separate source.
Oh, yeah.
Rural funds.
So you said if we have $100,000.
Martha say that we would maybe have $100,000 to $110,000 available for FY20, and you were not
for the CHIP.
For the CHIP
dollars, see?
Yes.
Yeah. So the facade grants are separate. So you're, I'm asking a Jim.
I understand.
Okay. All right. Please.
Leah. Specifically in regards to the urban renewal area plan, and that's the DIP funding source, that is actually on my schedule to come before you next week after the work session that occurred this Friday to set the guidelines and state the time frame if the board does want to do urban renewal area applications again for this upcoming time frame. Generally, we start with an invitation to all the entities and cities, school districts, those that have applied in the past, come in, sit down, tell them what the amounts are available, go through the deadlines, and then it would probably be sometime around, and I haven't thought through the process enough, May or early June, that we would have applications due, but this is all information that would be done next week. and then seek direction from the board whether or not you do that you want to do the program.
So two separate points. So while I feel very similarly about the value of the urban renewal projects or potential projects, and that's $100,000 roughly, and the facade grants, which is a placeholder at $10,000 out of the rural fund, I feel similarly about what value they bring. It's important to note that there are two separate processes, or in the past there have been two separate processes. The urban renewal has been a date certain deadline to get your application in every case but one. I think we've held pretty true to that deadline to get your application in. We've made a decision or multiple decisions based on the available funding, and it's been a one-time decision for the year and gone. That has not been true. We changed this 2 years ago, I think, on the facade grants, and we said we've got a placeholder of $10,000. And once, you know, we'd love to spend the $10,000 if there's good projects out there, but just when we get to the end of $10,000, it doesn't necessarily mean we run or done, because we would still welcome proposals if towns have it, and we run that continuously so that a town doesn't have to say, I'm making updates here, but they don't have to say in October they've got a chance to revitalize a building, but this project doesn't occur until June. They can say, hey, in October we got a chance to do this. Let's make application now.
So what I'm hearing is for the facade grants out of the rural fund, there's neither a deadline nor an upper limit.
We've never gone over the $10,000.
Okay.
But we indicated that the $10,000 was a placeholder in our budget, and we would still be interested in hearing about these opportunities even after the $10,000. Have we ever gone over the $10,000, Lisa?
No, I was going to say, we have, I think the maximum we've ever spent is $6,900.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We took very much to $10,000 in two steps. That just happened
in two separate years.
Okay. I want to thank everybody. That helps me understand where we are and what our options are.
I do want to just add, the reason we have the time specifics and the schedule and the process so delineated and clearly set forth for the TIP money and the urban renewal plan, a lot of that is guided by the state code of Iowa. And we need to make sure that we have the certified by December 1st. And that really is a part of that date that we work backwards from.
Which leads me to participating in housing, for us to directly get involved in housing in some fashion outside of the donation that we have made so far, the Story County Housing Trust Fund. And I'm trying to not go too far into this and help the Department of Standards get back here. But, Leanne, can you recap for me very briefly when you and I have talked about housing related to urban renewal, that you have said, I believe, twice to me, once as we had a discussion outside of urban, and I believe once in, about, well, that's too hard. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit about your hesitation about adding housing in to at least the urban renewal solution?
Well, I think my hesitation right now is it's not part of the economic development policies that have been established by the board. So if we should establish a new program in that, we would have to go forward and amend the policies and procedures. There are other entities that do housing. The difficulty is identifying actually the essence of the programs that would be set up. And that is a challenge. It's not one that's insurmountable by any means.
And coming to the board clearly is not a problem because people come all the time to the board for changes, right?
The first step would be if you did want to use the funding from the wind turbines and better equipment. We always just say the wind turbines, but better equipment is part of that funding source as well. We would have to amend the economic development policies. And I would definitely want to involve Ethan Anderson and the county attorneys in that, since that is adding a new element that we've not had as one of the five projects. One of the, it'd be basically another project to the four that already exist.
Okay, thank you. Now, this is the next one on my list. It's just talking about kind of the options here. Would be the discussions or about grant matching. All right. Now, is that something we want to put on our priority list for, or on our economic funding priority? Is that something we want to leave close to the top or have it on the bottom of the list? Do we want to say we don't want to look at getting involved at all in this year, at least, you know, but kind of look at our overall philosophy? And then another one that just occurred to me is that those types of projects that are quality of life. I think, you know, the Healthy Life Center is the one we're going to be asked to make a decision on very soon about participation in. But that's another that some people are pushing as an economic development type priority, regardless of where the funds come from. So is that something that we actually want as an economic development, you know, policy or priority here, saying we view quality of life projects like that?
Doesn't the Urban Renewal Plan already talk about housing in terms of blighted areas?
The original concept. The Urban Renewal Plan is that, but the economic development process and policies that are established by the board does not clarify or include that housing and types of developments related to such are types of projects that can be run through that funding process.
Does that make sense? To add housing or to consider housing, we would not have to change the Urban Renewal Plan, but we would have to change the policy.
No, you still need to add the projects themselves.
Yeah,
but you are
going to themselves, but not the tax.
No, not the tax.
That's
directly out of the code of Iowa, the tax. Okay.
Absolutely, and it's also within our policies that we establish the 50% cap.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm telling you guys, as a new board, you guys have some flexibility to look at anything. We all have the flexibility to look at anything we want, and if we're going to start messing with policies, then let's take a look at the whole policy and see what it is. Now, I think there's a lot in our existing policy that has absolutely worked, but it doesn't mean we can't have the full conversation, and then all of a sudden, if you're talking about the caps not 50%, it changes the denominator for everything. You got to decide what your appetite is,
right,
for any of that.
But I'm going to point out to Mr. Greiner about who has given us very solid and consistent feedback about the need for the local school district, especially to go ahead and keep some of that revenue with that. But yes,
yeah,
you have the option to take more, but I'm not necessarily. I didn't sit here today and say, oh, you know, let's look at that. But, yes, now that you brought that up, is that maybe this is a discussion that we go ahead and reschedule later.
Well, don't misunderstand. I'm not indicating that I would be – I like our policies the way they are. I just want it fully understood that this board has the ability to take a look at all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I would go back to whether grant matches are important. I would hope, Morris, that we can get to the full and end of that conversation because I'm one that feels that us participating with our towns, and I won't just say small towns there, us participating with our towns and cities in some of these grant opportunities, some of these grant opportunities are 80% funded, and you'd hate to think that we were missing on an opportunity for a portion of 20% of a grant, right, the match. And so I'd like us to finish that. We started that conversation back in November or December. I'd like us to finish that conversation and just see where we are on that
one. Okay. All right. The agenda is listed broadly enough. It says consideration. And so we could vote on something if you'd like to take that as today, or if you'd like to bring it back as a separate issue. I mean, I'm giving everybody here the option on that, okay?
I have a clarifying question for myself.
Yes.
And probably several people in this room know the answer, but maybe not all. So, stupid question, here we go. Facade grants, rural funds, correct?
Correct.
urban renewal grants, TIF, grant matches, TIF funds?
Great question.
Yeah,
depends on the grant.
We've never gotten, we've never gotten to that part of the conversation.
Rural workforce pilot programs?
I put that in there because I believe there's been a floating of the 100,000 feet about maybe some meeting that in the future.
Okay, well, that's not something we're doing now. And
we're not doing it now.
We don't have a source of funds identified.
You're saying rural workforce?
Well, that and workforce pilot, to me, that's probably closer to transportation.
Okay. Because our workforce, we have a contract with the ABC that I would contend is responsible for all workforce initiatives, rural or municipal, in the county.
So transportation is part of that. The other part is what Deb Childress and Brenda Dreyer and Sarah Jones, I believe, from United Way just brought to us last week, given the fact that there's a 60,000 kind of a stipend with that, but most likely will require some additional funds over that 18 months, depending what the strategies are. So I lumped transportation because it's workforce related. I lumped that program all in there, just kind of a generic.
Just on the funds that could come from a project, you can speak to Brenda about this more, but from my understanding, the additional cost would be just evidence of your ability to demonstrate the ability to implement.
And she didn't talk about that last, so I understand that's why I'm saying possibly. And I know Deb is back there also saying possibly, who knows.
It looks like Mr. Grinder's going to have a question, but can I finish my list? Housing pilot programs, we're not doing that. What we accomplished source of funds if we did do it?
We could TIF, we could take it out of the general budget. It would be
basic,
right?
Okay. And the quality of life.
Once again, we talked about bonding, only in a real general sense. Quality of life would be general fund or bonding, correct?
No.
I'm sorry?
Yes, general fund, and if you're going to bond, you're going to pay for out of general fund,
right?
Okay, that helps me, thank you.
And we also have the home-based Iowa program, and then the neighborhood. Just how many general fund dollars? And then the two contracts with Ames Economic Development Commission, which are general fund dollars.
General fund, which would pay for.
And then in addition to that, the annual funding to the Story County Economic Development Group, which is out of the rural block.
So I would say just a priority being to continue with home-based Iowa, to continue with the contract, for ABC for next year. I'm comfortable with that. Also, the workforce contract. Thank you, guys. So those, I think, are definitely priorities of mine for that total kind of cup of, if you will, of economic development. Martin, have a seat.
I just want to point out, to the newer members of the board, these TIF funds, they're not tax monies that are available from this year. You're actually bonding. You're spending money from 10, 15, 20 years in the future today. So you're spending your kids' inheritance, basically. So remember that when you're using TIF funds from the window.
Yeah, and just to clarify, because Art is 100% right, anytime we bond for TIF funds, and we've done that twice now, right? What was the third one?
Oh, twice. No, you're right.
We've done it twice. Two separate projects.
Yeah, okay.
But we did it for Nakins Lake, and we did it for Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, where the county has used some of those TIF funds, but not in a situation where we've got to pay back something, is these special projects that we've done. So just two separate components there. Arden, in terms of traditional TIF, the traditional way to use TIF is you borrow the money up front and then you pay it back over time. We've done that with two projects.
Thank you. Other input from staff as far as the types of funding we're already doing and programming we're already doing. so that we left nothing off of this economic funding, economic development type of bowl.
So
I see the
yeah, as she's walking up, I just have a question for you, Doris. So are you suggesting that we would draw a line in the sand and say, okay, if it doesn't make the cut today, it's not something we can consider in the future? Or are you planning on leaving this a little open-ended, that we may have some opportunities that we don't know exist yet? I would hope we have the opportunity to discuss those as they come up, rather than trying to artificially create barriers that say, okay, we didn't talk about it on January 22nd, therefore we can't talk about it.
Leaving it open? Given that we've set our priorities about where we would say, boy, that's way outside of where our list is. You'd be far down on your list. So, on our list. So I understand what you're saying there. I don't want to ever not consider a new opportunity. But that would, but I definitely hope that we can set kind of the parameters for us about what we know is likely to come before. Because that's, we know, there was somebody who's going to ask about the SBA grant. We already know there are two considerations under maybe the urban renewal money, right? We just heard from Dustin about the future where we're talking out there. We know about home-based Iowa. We know about these things. So we're going to get those things funded first. Or we're going to take a look at them as a big priority, and if we jump over that priority to look at it as something new, there's a good reason it's a one-of-a-kind project or something like that.
Yeah, so I think I agree with that completely. It is, if you're talking about prioritizing what we know, then great.
Right.
As long as we don't get stuck on what we don't know.
Right. Okay, now that's philosophy. Supervisor Merkin.
I think I'm comfortable with that. There are a lot of asks. There are a lot of things that we're putting on a list. We haven't talked about interoperability. We haven't talked about, all of those things. And obviously, there's an ask from the Health and Life Center. So I would be, I would not want to get out there too far. Besides what we already know.
So, I also believe we'll at some point see an ask from Nevada for something for their rec center if it moves ahead. And, Andy might know more about it than we do anymore, given that we don't have somebody sitting on the committee right anymore. And I believe that you're involved somewhat with that to the school board, right?
I can just share what I've heard at the board table.
Sure.
I'm not the representative of the Nevada School Board.
I understand that.
Nevada School Board Joint Committee. I did come up here. One other program that the Board of Supervisors has done annually with 1 year off and on has been the Technical Assistance Future
sure.
Program. Usually is an outshoot of the budget discussion. I read the last year's letter that was sent to the cities. It's for those communities, again, smaller than 2,000 or 3,000 persons in size. This one, we actually bumped up to 3,000. They can apply for matching assistance for different types of projects, like capital improvements plans, strategic plans. We've had Cambridge have a site plan done for expansion of an industrial park. It's just part of the technical assistance cost for that specific project. And so this would be another opportunity that might come out after the budget discussion.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, Leanne. In technical assistance, that has not ever been something that the Board of Supervisors has budgeted for a fiscal year. It has always been that about this point in the fiscal year, we said, hey, we have identified $20,000 in savings that we're going to have. We would like to offer an opportunity, and up until now it's been the small towns. We'd like to offer an opportunity to our small towns to get some of their organizational documents and some of the things that they would need for grants done, and so we'll participate in them doing it. But it hasn't been something where we've said, oh, this is going to be general fund dollars, and we're going to budget it to start out. It has been hey, our budget, we're going really, really well on our budget this year. Here's an opportunity for us to reach out to our small towns and assist them in bettering themselves. It's never been a budget conversation.
So that's a good question there also about because it has been well used and the communities have found it particularly helpful to have it there when they needed it in their time frame. Is that something that we want to start to put in the budget as a guarantee? Kind of like we do, the Home Days Iowa is in there, and the facade grant, we do a place marker off.
And I just checked the year we did take off 2015.
Okay.
The budget was really tight that year, and there was an opportunity. You mentioned that it is really this time of year that the opportunity is identified if it does exist and then share it with. I come before the board with the resolution and then share with the community.
I think I'm more comfortable with keeping it as if we have strip cost funds.
Right.
Okay.
So let's come back then and decide, or just the grant matches program in general then. Because I think we've talked through everything we've had in the past. So that Supervisor Sanders had asked that we try to come to some resolution on grant matches. We could try and address it today, see if we've got that.
So I would prefer if we had that, if we're going to do that, let's have it as its own agenda item. Let's make sure we've got the people in the audience that need. So I would think that Brenda would need to be over for that. I would recommend that John Hall be over for that. I'd like to see, I just lost his name, Story City. Jackson here for that conversation. I just think there's multiple people that need to have some input if we're going to have that conversation.
You fine with that, or Supervisor Merkinson?
Yeah, I can go with that. My hesitation is that it almost will become, or it could become, a presentation of what everybody wants. And you could get too much into specifics rather than talking in general about the usefulness of grant matches. And I think you're wanting the latter, the general usefulness, rather than here's what I would pitch to you for next year.
I completely agree, except as we consider whether that's a program we want to go down the road of, it might be helpful to know the kind of opportunities that might present themselves, because then we make a more, I'm not saying we approve those opportunities. I'm saying the discussion is, do we want to have a program like this? And I just think there are real world experiences that I think can be informative as we try to make a decision.
I wanted to raise expectations in a year when we have so much on our plate anyway. That's my concern in the way. I think we'll be raising expectations. We've got the towers, we've got, Huntsville Healthy Life, we've got Justice Center roof, we've got how many things?
Well, we're nominating them for the county attorney as we take a look at other, what we've got in the CIP on our first pass on that. There's a lot of money in there. So back to now with who should be at that conversation. I will tell you, I was hoping that a couple more of those people would be here today, but given the weather, that kind of, I expect that maybe Mark Jackson would show up for that. So having other voices, if we could stick to what's the usefulness of it, but Mark Jackson said something to me that was the absolute true bottom line when we were discussing a possible match program related to the EB expansion and them needing to do like a one walk street or whatever. He said, gee, Laura, you offer me money and I'll take it. So realistically, what would we get back from feedback from them if it weren't going to be to hear about some of the projects they would look for? I mean, that's what they do as far as economic development.
How much,
and I'm going to ask you to come on up.
how much money does Story City already retain in their own TIF money? And then they come to the county and ask for more TIF money.
I know, but
I don't know if I want to say that. This is the point. It's so inequitable. You want all the askers here. Why don't you ask for the payers to be here?
Right.
You're talking about Story City, wanting input to Story City people. Or Mr. Jackson.
But also Nevada.
How many dollars does Story City retain in their own TIF districts that never comes to the county?
Mm-hmm.
Which is thousands of dollars. I think their TIF district did $700,000 of property in their TIF districts.
That'd be more. $700,000
might be what they bring in.
The revenues. Okay.
And then you want to come to the county so you ask for more county funds?
I think it's a great question.
It's not a great question. It's borderline inequitable.
Okay. No, that's
you've got a lot of friends, the people that you give money to. I mean, you want to start, and I don't think Rick mentioned you don't want to be the primary driver in these things. But you hire Dustin and the past people like him to go out to the communities to drive these things. You are the primary driver of these things. Because you've been working with this for many, many years, and the projects have come slowly out of the cities. You know, and pretty soon, it's the old, well, everyone else is taking it, I better be taking it too.
We haven't been the primary funder of those things.
But driver, the driver, the difference.
You're definitely driven.
And I recently had that conversation.
I mean, when you start getting anyone who felt me, you're getting into a sticky way. You're picking and choosing.
Winners and losers.
Yes, and you're using everybody's money. And like I go back to Huxley, keeping $800,000 for every person that lives there. Or $800 for every person. It's a huge amount of money. And like in Cambridge, did they just build a community building that's $1.2 million or something?
We gave a previous report,
through the... Well, the Zerans had a nice community building, built several years ago. They spent $200,000-some. But now, all of a sudden, we've got public funds, and my goodness, we're going way past need, and we're way getting into want, I think.
Yeah, so I don't disagree. I don't disagree... Generally, most of them are, and it's kind of interesting. I don't disagree with what you say generally. The problem I have is you look at what the goal of this program has been. So you're talking about Dustin and the ones before him and everything else. The entire goal for getting that done was to improve or give our small towns an opportunity to improve themselves. Look at Zerin. Look at Collins. Look at Cambridge. Is it working? You're dang straight. If that's your goal, and you're saying that we're the driver of that, are our small towns improving? Absolutely, they're improving. What have we invested to get that improvement? Again, I'm going to guess it's $1.3 million all said and done, and to probably see $15 or $20 million of improvements of our smallest towns. And so if you're going to argue whether it's working or not, I'd say go to some of our small towns. It's absolutely working.
But I didn't bring up the fact that you should bring the Story City. So
I like him here because he's got an expertise on TIF, probably in a way you don't like, but he's got an expertise in TIF that's unlike anything else we have in the county. Mark Jackson knows TIF backwards and forwards.
But was one of the projects in Story City Yule lighting for the businesses on Main Street?
We gave about $70,000 for Yule.
For Yule lighting on Main Street.
Sort of lighting wasn't used.
I went up for that, but it's not like it went up and came back down.
Okay. So we bought Christmas lights,
we bought lights.
No. Yeah. There it is.
Okay, let's not get into practicality. Let's
say
$30,000 that we're doing great.
So,
someone else is running.
I'd like to comment to back to Supervisor Sanders about the small towns is probably going to be done. What we're discussing here, as far as scheduling a separate meeting on, is a grant match program that would incorporate more than the small towns, if I'm correct. So I just want to point that out for a shift. And My other concern about having the separate meeting, just to point this out, not only will we have all of the askers there, and very few of them are going to say, don't give me money, I am just concerned about this program in general, given that anymore there's usually tax abatement that comes with the Act 2, and we don't even get a decide on that one. So that level of conversation is where we may be at. Now, so I've got one who is interested in holding it preferred or having the conversation be here today, if I heard that correctly. All right, and we've got you interested in having a separate meeting.
Not a separate meeting, an agenda item on a future meeting. And all I would say to that, Boris, if what I'm hearing is accurate, I can't believe that what I'm hearing is accurate, so please correct. Are you suggesting that you would prefer that the Board of Supervisors, who has the ultimate authority to say yes or no in any of these, that we not even have the conversation because that is so far outside of anything I've come to expect of you? I thought I view you as somebody who wants to talk about everything and talk about it a lot, and now I'm hearing something different.
Then you're hearing me somewhat wrong. Okay. Because I'm leaning toward having the agenda item on it, given the fact that we've had the snow debate. Because usually when we would put on the agenda economic funding priorities, everybody would show up. But I get the point here that a separate discussion on creating the possibility of creating a new program needs to have a robust discussion since we don't have an agreement on it. To me, the factor is the snow. Okay, is that not everybody possibly could get here? Because we are having a discussion on it, though.
And I'm correct that we can do the grant match even though we don't have a separate program.
Correct.
We can do that. So it's back to economic funding priorities, which is our topic today. All right. So from that standpoint, we can talk about is it a priority today? All right. So for me, it's not a priority today, but I recognize the input that you want to get from it.
So where Linda just went, I would be fine if we left it there. So is it a priority for me that we have this program? Absolutely not. But is it a priority for me that we be able to listen if there's an opportunity somewhere in Story County for us to participate in? Yeah, I don't want to do anything that closes the door on us being able to have that specific conversation. And what I've gotten from you to this point, and both of you in some instances, is that you like having policies and procedures to kind of fit every situation. I would prefer that we have more flexibility, but if we're going to have policies and procedures to fit every situation, then this should be one of them. If it's not, if we're going to deal with things as they come to us, that's the way I prefer to work anyway. If somebody's got a proposal to make, come make it, and we get to be the decision maker.
The only policies and procedures, but we don't have to have them for everything.
I like that answer. I mean, I agree with that.
You have policies and procedures when they are useful to you and they help you further your work. I think that, honestly, if we develop policies and procedures for this right now, we're doing it at the wrong time and giving the wrong message, which is we have lots of money to invest, which I don't yet think that we do.
Okay, so I hear that point of view if we're going to take the time to deal with something that we're not, for the foreseeable period of time, be able to fund anyway. Why spend the time you're saying with entertaining everything as it comes along?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And then we make the decision at that point in time. How does this fit in our funding opportunities? How does this fit in the list of priorities that we have? How does this specific item fit? And the only reason I brought it up that I thought we ought to have more of the conversation is I felt like this was a funneling effect of what we were going to be able to consider in the future. If we're going to be able to consider any opportunity that might come up and make a yes-no decision at that point, you know, I'm good.
Well, and that's what I thought we talked about earlier on that, about, yeah, we should look at opportunities as they come up, but I was I think I was in the middle. I'm looking at who do we definitely want to make sure that it's available, given whatever resources we have, what's our priority list here. So I came back to facade grants, the home base Iowa. I guess I tech assistance, that's why I thought put it in the budget, but I'm good with leave it out if it's a higher priority for us to make sure about that. So that's where my comfort level is that we make sure that some programs that we have done in the past don't get pushed aside for the latest and greatest opportunity. And then also then as because of knowing that there's going to be at least an ask for the Healthy Life Center, anticipating an ask from the Nevada Rec Center, then I had looked at, I had anticipated having a discussion about whether we're just going to say we're not going to do recreational facilities or, but if you guys want to take them one at a time, that as they come along.
An ask and a yes are two entirely different things.
Okay. All right.
Let me go back to this. The SOC grants, home-based Iowa, economic development contracts.
Yeah, the economic development contracts that we have now.
Urban renewal grant.
Yeah, that's on our present one. We're not sure we're going to have much money for it yet, but from a priority general standpoint.
So with that list, if I'm not missing something, we continue the kind of commitments we have been doing in the past. Say those are the priorities. But we're not ruling out doing some other things if the money is there.
That's a good summation, Supervisor Sanders?
True.
Okay. All right. Anybody want to make any motions or want to move on? No motions? No motions? We're going to move on. All right. Thank you for that. Now, next is work with us. Discussion and consideration of establishing a staff working group to review adopted social media policies and request revisions as necessary to the Board of Supervisors. Dan Hoyer.
Good morning. So, this is going to be relatively quick. I did prepare a memo for the board in advance of today's meeting that outlines the issue. Quite simply, our social media policy and our social networking policy have not been looked at in a number of years. It is moving so rapidly. It being social media, we think it's appropriate to establish a staff working group to go forth and look at them and bring back to the board recommendations. There are some different models out there. AIMS has some unique approaches. We just want an opportunity at the staff level to look at it and make sure it's the first is how fast it's exploding and how we're using it and bring it back. Are there questions?
None? Thanks, good idea. Who would be on the group?
It would be Alyssa, Deb, Alyssa Wigmell, Deb Shilroth, and Marv Steinbeck, and myself. And then Ethan Anderson, as you know. Did I forget someone?
Have you considered bringing in somebody from conservation and somebody?
She's so good.
Yeah. And also maybe whoever's going to be the new PIO out of the Sheriff's Department.
Yeah, we could do that.
I think that gives you a broader group about the ways that the county is using social. With that, any more discussions or a motion?
So is this a motion or a direction or what is this?
This is a motion.
This is in consideration.
Yeah, so I would move that we establish a working group that includes the PIO, the Sheriff's Office, Eric Place, Alyssa Wignall, Deb Shilroth, Mark Steinbeck, Leanne Harder, with advice from Ethan Anderson.
Second.
Okay.
Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Next is discussion and consideration of pre-meeting welcoming slideshow for special meetings. And this is wrapped up by me with the special meeting tonight. I anticipated that we could put some information before the group accepted to be there. Some of it was in general county information, the budget coming up with, et cetera, and some would be pictures, some would be the agenda, basically, that's available a lot. So I suggested that to the staff. I'm actually the one doing the work. However, the staff felt I needed to get permission from the rest of the board so that it was not misinterpreted as I was directing staff to do it.
Yeah, so I think having a generic slideshow video that can be modified for specific meetings makes a lot of sense. I appreciate you putting in the work to get it done. I think it's worth having. I'd make the motion that we continue to put it together.
Second.
Justin Sanders.
Aye.
Thank you. Now we're going to go on and we're going to move to discussion and direction regarding essential county purpose bonds with Lisa Markley and Ethan.
Submit the documentation for what our request is, so any questions on it?
None.
To get to certification on April 1st, and thinking that we would have to use outside counsel for at least one of these two possible projects, are you comfortable with the timing that you're laying out here that it all gets done? This has always taken longer than we thought.
And that's why I wanted to work backwards on the timeline, because it always takes longer than we think. Ethan and Jessica were pretty confident.
I have the 28E we filed today with Secretary of State. Leanne's offered to help me with that. That gets us going on the radio project.
Okay.
Now the StoryCom will be officially created effective today. And then we can, StoryCom can then enter into a contract. So hopefully that will get done hopefully before the deadline.
Okay.
And it's your expectation, Ethan, that we could handle that bonding in-house. It's bonding for roads. If we were to go down that road, we'd need to go to outside counsel.
That's correct. In consultation with the county attorney, that's what our recommendation would be.
There is, just a side note, there is a requirement, or no, there is, the code gives 15 days petition for an election. I just want to give you that number. It's 20% of the votes from the presidential in 2016, so there would be 10,100 signatures needed in order to petition for an election, as opposed to approving the board. It's just the board approving that's one of the block code sections.
And we've got that 15 days built in.
Yes.
Loris, I heard, so I think we came to the end of the conversation with $900,000, but I heard you mention the possibility of bonding for HVAC units or something like that. Did you want to have any of that conversation in your conference?
It sounds like, based upon the fact our limit there would be $900,000, and that would be to be able to put that in this bond, as I understand it, we have to spend $1.1 million at the same time, or we couldn't get all of the funding in anyway. So other than asking about a payout, you know, what the levy rate would be for the $900,000, and then I guess we could discuss it on Friday to see if we wanted to take $1.1 million out of reserves. I'm a little hesitant, but it would take out of the long-term budget and save us $900,000 that was not a general fund.
I think you have to go down the road to actually, I think you would have to go down the road a ways before you could actually do that, because the total project cost is what it's based on. So if the total project cost is $2 million, $2 million, okay, whatever that total project cost is over 3 years, you would have to be 2 years down the road in order to talk about paying for the balance of it.
Thank you. Okay. Well, now we're taking out of this discussion.
We could bond the last $900,000 or less.
Correct.
Yeah.
The last 900,000 or less.
But 2 years ago.
I just want to make sure we didn't have anything else plugged in here.
And understand that what you're getting here is a complete and entire guesstimate as to what kind of levy, what kind of interest rates we're talking about for the bonds. I'm putting the interest rate at where our TIF bond just was. I think Ethan is of the impression that it would probably be less than that, or it could be more. My point is, you can't, you can always lower that debt levy. You can't raise it after the public hearing.
And we're 17 cents per thousand in this FY.
Correct.
So the big decision for the first big decision for the Board of Supervisors is that we go through our budget discussions, it would be inserting a debt service levy that, again, we can always lower as late as certifying the budget, but we wouldn't be able to raise once you published it. So our next decision, Laura, as I see it, would be as we put the budget together, are we wanting to plug in a number for the debt service,
right,
which then will start to trigger everything else.
Any other questions?
No. What if we haven't asked for the health and life extension? What if we were, to look at that at some point in the next few months, what would be our options there?
It is not an essential component.
Right.
It would be a general obligation. And it would have to be a vote. It's my interpretation. Ethan, are you?
Yeah, generally speaking, general obligation bonds are both, for my purposes, are noble situations. So, yeah, the general idea of
So, I agree with that, and with all apologies to Arden since he already left, I also think, I believe that legally, not saying it's a good idea, but legally you could assume to tip that to do that and call it economic development. I'm not for that at all. I'm telling you what I believe your options are if we're going to go down that road.
And that's all I wanted to know is, you know, not what is likely or what anybody would want to do, because we're not there yet. So I just wanted to know the options.
Correct. And from even in my interpretation, it does not qualify as an essential county purpose.
Right.
Okay? It qualifies, however, as a general county purpose. The limit on a general county purpose without a vote, without an election, is $300,000.
Right. But legally, that would not preclude us from using reserve funds as long as we didn't borrow any money. And it would not, I believe, preclude us from using a TIF bond to do it. I'm not saying either one's a good option. I'm saying, as I see it, those are the two options.
I'm sorry if I interrupted you.
I just was going to. It's fine. He's just giving you options, not a preference for options.
Can I understand that?
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. We're good. Thank you. Thanks, Lisa, for coming over twice.
Do you want to
sign it?
Pardon?
Do you want to sign it?
Just mention? All right. Actually, I'm not going to do that, but okay. So,
looks good.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, move forward.
Yes, move forward. Ready for the quarterly financial report. And also Lisa Markley.
Again, it was in the packet, and what I just point out is that as of December 31st, 50% of the year, And we have this conversation quite a bit through the budget work sessions anyway, of where everybody's at in their budgets and such. 14 departments are over 50%, but overall expenditures for the county are 46.5%, so we're a little below 50%. As you can see, where we're at in the fund balances, we've spent 51% of the general fund dollars that we have appropriated for the year, that we have budgeted for the year, 59% of supplemental funds. Rural services, 46%, so we're hovering around 50 for most of them. For revenues, we have 12 departments that are over 50% on where their revenues are, that they're here today for revenues. And I think that we are doing a fairly appropriate and accurate job of budgeting revenues closer to actual, and that is indicated as far as this goes.
Yeah, so I would just weigh in that there is nothing I see in this budget, in this report, that causes me concern. I think we're tracking right where we need to be tracking at this point in time. I don't think this is quite as good as we've been in a few of our previous years where we were tracking much better, but I think we're on pace with all of our projections. And Lisa, unless you tell me there's something in here that concerns you, I don't see anything in here that concerns me.
There's a couple of departments that I'm keeping fairly close tabs on as to where their spending is, because we're going to need to amend earlier than we thought, perhaps. But at this point in time, and our office is one of them, and we'll talk about that when we come to board with our budget, a lot of our expenses come in the first half of the year in this case because of the election. So we spent the dollars early so that we're assuming over the whole year. And there's another department that's the same way. So I'm just keeping tabs on it. Obviously, I always come to you guys and say, I need to amend the budget. I need to amend the budget.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And now we're headed to discussion and direction of proposed revisions to the onboarding video. Leanne Harder and Noel McClatchy. I see Leanne again. Noel is somewhere else.
She's transferring for me.
All right, great.
Noel will be joining us shortly. She's making sure that the board sponsor transfer right now. I'll go ahead and begin though. There was a memo prepared for the board's meeting today that did really outline the background and the issue. Just a brief recap. And I do want to start with Samantha Boyd. This is Zayo. Zayo 525 is in the audience. The memo does reference her. I want to thank her for making the trip over here too if you have any questions of her. Noel brought for the onboarding program to the board a couple years ago for consideration. We've been internally creating the documents, the video, setting the course of training, whatever is needed for the onboarding program. Actually, as a longstanding employee of Story County, I have to say how impressed I am with the program, too. I only wish I would have had it 20-some years ago. What we have at hand right now, though, is Supervisor Olson did request that staff contact different communications consultants, specifically in regards to the video. The video that I think everyone has seen it now. I know we've done some retakes to address new elected officials. Was done entirely in-house with our own camera. I have to apologize to everyone that watches it because I was incredibly ill, and I am the voiceover, and that's like an octave lower than my normal voice. But I did follow up with Samantha Boyd. That was one of the names that Supervisor Olson recommended. She indicated there's different levels of assistance that she or all tech consultants can provide. So that's why we're here today, so that we can get some direction from the board. Do you want us to bring someone to edit the existing video? It's laid out, 4 bullet points in the memo. Do you have anything you want to add? Are there any questions?
There are no questions other than pointing out that if the funds aren't in the budget, but we could go ahead and see if they are available from the fiscal year 19 budget.
They're in the proposed 20 budget. I think that's
the proposed 20.
We did. And so how many proposed budget? We did have funds that will be discussed at Friday's work session.
So if we wanted to get it done sooner, started sooner, what would be a realistic price for creating a new video?
You're talking starting all from scratch, brand new.
Correct.
Not using any of the existing elements. Do you feel comfortable giving us an amount?
Or price range?
Yeah.
Or price range?
There's so many variables. If you're, depending on how the length of the video, how many...
Burger. Oops,
yeah.
Pardon?
Okay.
That's right. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yes. Same to Boyd and Bay with 525. There's a lot of variables in creating a brand new video. Depending on the length of the video, the number of people that need to be interviewed. But I think the key factor that maybe could be expanded on a little bit, just the strategy behind the video. Why are we interviewing people we're interviewing? What's the experience of the new employee? What kind of culture are we trying to create from the very beginning? And so to start over is actually not a bad idea, just because kind of repurposing takes a lot of time that isn't necessarily needed. But looking at a brand new video is also, I mean, you're looking at probably, do you think we do an hour or do a shorter? I guess I would recommend shorter segment. Yeah. Is that what you're thinking? Okay. You're looking at probably around 5,000 inputting the actual doing the video with a professional camera, voiceover, a second.
And, Samantha, what's a realistic timeline? If we were to say at some point, yeah, let's go. Yeah. You know, we like the pricing. What from beginning to end, what's a reasonable time?
Right. If you're working with my company, we can do very quickly, so you're probably to be done in a couple of months. Just from start to finish, getting all the thing that takes the most time is getting your schedules on video and that kind of thing. But the editing and that kind of thing, just a week at most. Different agencies are going to have much different timelines, so that was intended.
So what I also heard you say was being strategic about it.
Right.
And that takes some planning time. That much is the,
yeah. Right. So that would be a great point. A couple months is just actual video, getting the video, getting everyone lined up, doing the voiceover, cutting, editing, and getting the video. If you look into sort of the bigger project, the strategy behind what you're trying to communicate to new employees, there's probably a month or so of kind of strategy and working with Leanne and the rest of the team on what they're trying to accomplish.
But the $5,000 does include the strategy part of it, right? So that we've got a well-organized plan entered in what you want to convey by the time you're done.
I would say $5,000 is probably more just the actual video, doing the video, the editing, and that kind of thing. Strategy is so hard. It depends. If you're just talking about the video, sure, we can have a conversation in an hour and say it's what we're trying to accomplish. But it should fit into your bigger onboarding process.
And I would really caution us plugging any number in at this
Absolutely.
Point, because the reality is we don't even really know what we're asking for
right.
at this point.
I do, but I mean, I have a clear idea about what.
Right, I said we don't know what we're asking
for. Yeah, I understand that. Sure. A video that at least has what I'm going to call a storyboard. They plan out in advance who's going to be in the video and what they're going to say, what each person. So Supervisor Sanders may talk about one part of being a supervisor. The Supervisor Merkin talks another part. I discuss another part. And that it be, especially since we do a quarterly orientation, so that then we're asked to get up and speak to the people personally. We're not saying exactly what we said in the video already. That so the storyboard, or you can consider it a list of, you know, what key points do we want this person to make, so that the person getting the onboarding understands more about us. And I mean us as the county, so that the shots are coordinated, so that they're shot with some consistency in the quality of the areas being shot, the lighting, et cetera, which makes it easier to get your message across and your viewer to stay engaged. So that to me is the basic core there of just that. So we're putting out something that is, they learn by watching it, and they learn something that they won't learn elsewhere in the process.
There's also a lot of strategic work that can go up front, and what are the positions that you hold that may be changing over, so you could not have you saying something that it has to be said, maybe the voiceover saying kind of those some consistent things that are never going to change, so that if we do need to swap out pieces of supervisor, that kind of thing, it's not going to cost you as much down the road. You just have a little bit more thought from the spec behind who's saying what parts of the thing.
I guess I was always, when I was thinking strategy, and I appreciate that. I think that's one part of it. When I heard strategy, I was also thinking, how does this fit into, say, the first year of somebody's experience as a new employee? You know, we're setting the stage for some things that they're going to be learning, that they need to learn, they need to know about the county. So I'm seeing the strategy being, what is it we really want them to get out of this? And will that really help them in their first year of employment? And I think that, you know, looking at, you know, not just the first day or something like that, but how it fits into the training they're going to have in how they learn their job. And that is the tougher part.
Right.
I think the tougher part. So, okay.
So you're looking for direction. Okay. I advocate, obviously, that we proceed forward in getting a firmer price from Samantha to bring back with a little more detail laid out in for a contract, basically, for us then to take a look at and determine if these are the terms that we want and if it's a doable price. I see Noelle coming up. So.
Okay. Hi. And I'm just, maybe you're in, I'm just verifying this is creating a new video, starting from scratch. Rather than editing the existing video.
Correct. Like that would be.
We've also talked about a recruitment video, which I think is for a different audience.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a project that you'd like us to continue as well?
It would be something if you want to talk about it and look at a contract, and I'm looking both to the right and the left.
I didn't hear what you said. Repeat it.
We talked about a recruitment video.
Okay, thank you.
For potential employees, and that's a different. I feel like that's a different focus.
It is.
And onboarding.
What would you do with the recruitment video? Are you talking about a 60-second one that people would watch 30 to 60 on the internet, social media?
Absolutely, and then also at Curriculum.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Samantha, if you don't mind continuing to work with them put together a sample contract, once again, staying with the content and, you know, what would be in that, kind of your range of what you're looking for. But I'm looking to my left and I'm looking to my right. I'm going to get busy in a minute.
Yeah, so I would say I agree with staff having the conversations about producing a new video or onboarding and a new recruitment video. I believe that the substance of this conversation should occur at our budget work session Friday,
where we go through and we talk about, so as I understand it, we've got money in the budget for next year starting July 1st to do these things. And so then the conversation becomes, well, can we find the dollars to do it yet this spring? It's the same conversation we have with a lawmaker or whatever. I think that's where this conversation shifts, other than I agree with direction to staff to continue work with Samantha to try to put together the parameters of what something might look like so that once we find the dollars, if we find the dollars, we can move ahead.
Okay. You've heard the direction and you've heard where the conversation on money with her. Okay, as it starts here. So thank you very much, both of you. Thank you. And with any other questions for us, we do want to clarify the existing video will be used next week, though.
Yes.
Next week. So we'll be continuing to use that.
The existing video is 1,000 times better than what we had before.
Yes.
Or the first video is 1,000 times better than what we had before, and I'm assuming this new video is going to be 1,000 times better than our first video.
If I was seeing the first video October 1998, it would change how I approached my first 6 months of work here.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Excellent. All right. So we're at public forum number 2, and thank you once again. Thanks for coming over here.
Yes, absolutely.
How are the roads out there, Samantha?
Yeah.
Hey, I made it.
Okay.
So that's on my list.
They're not horrible, but it is Iowa, you know.
All right. Okay. So we have no members of the public except for Colin Sam. Okay. See, nobody comes to the microphone. Liz on assignment committee meeting updates, announcements, and also I believe we have a discussion here about what we want to do about tonight at the meeting, given the weather forecast. I'm an Iowa kid, so I come out in it. I have been contacted by a couple of people who don't prefer to drive a lot at night, and then they're concerned about getting out in bad weather. All right, just to let you know, kind of feedback or whatever. Alyssa called, and the call is available every night next week, but that doesn't mean we're available every night next week. So we don't want to make sure to weigh in on a preference here as far as do we want to reschedule this meeting or do we want to go ahead and try to go ahead given all of the parameters that would have to occur.
So you can update the weather forecast.
Let me check right now and ask if possible for...
Yeah, Darren said the wind, it's still freezing rain and the snow has been pushed off now till probably 5 o'clock or later and winds the same time.
Okay. So it was a 7 o'clock.
So my concern, I would just soon us get it done. Right. My concern is not with us. It's not even necessarily with members of the public who choose to come to this meeting. My concern is with any and every staff member that we're requiring to come to this meeting, and I hate the thought of putting them in a bad situation. I don't know if it's going to be a bad situation, but that's my concern.
Okay.
And so let's just recognize that concern and then do whatever we do.
Okay.
So this afternoon, 80% wintry mix. I-27, tonight 80%, it's like down to 40% snow and patches along the snow, but it's going to be icy.
And I have a concern.
And along the snow, it's hard to drive.
Right.
Okay. I'm thinking about all the people who are going to be, whether it's employees or members of the public, I'm a little concerned.
So just to acknowledge also that if we go to next week, there's, of course, not a guarantee that Mother Nature won't say hello to us again. That everybody would be available because, as you point out about the number of staff people, they're going to have to be there next week also, so with the risk. So,
I'm only available Tuesday night next week. I've got Micah Monday, I've got ISAC Wednesday, I've got Healthy Life Center. We have Healthy Life Center Thursday, and then I'm out all day.
Okay, so that narrows us down to Tuesday next week.
If you want me there. You may not want me there.
so.
Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure he's ready to be there.
Yeah.
That was a joke, Laura, that you didn't even take it as a joke.
I'm sorry. I am sorry. You know, I got up last night. I will admit I'm tired. And when I got up and spoke last night at the little 2 minutes for the Martin Luther King Day, I knew what I was going to say a little bit. I got off, and then afterwards I had like three different people come up and say, I really liked what you said, and I could not quote you back what I said. Okay, so ditto for their sense of humor, I guess. All right, so back to it. I'm looking out at the staff who's going to be there. Honest feedback. Does anybody, I mean, seriously, you don't want to. Paula has an
honest staff. Why can't you have it during the day next week? That would be maybe ahead of the weather.
Okay, if some of the logistics we discussed with Dave Paul, including parking, make it a little different. So, Alyssa, what did they say about any kind of late afternoon meeting?
I did not ask.
Okay. I do, just hearing from you, you'd be at ISAC, right? So,
Thursday I'll be at ISAC. So, Wednesday evening I'll be at ISAC. I don't know my whole schedule.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you know, so as far as that part of it, oh, man. So, well, I got two of you who do the safety concerns would like to be very cautious here.
Yeah, let me be clear.
Yeah.
I would prefer we do it tonight. I'm concerned about requiring staff to be here.
Got it. Okay. Todd, or Ethan, you care to weigh in on responsibility? I mean, I know the moral and ethical responsibility is to put everybody home nice in their houses for the night.
I know it's an half hours event, but I don't see it any different for an employee at that event as opposed to choosing to come to work today. It's still, I think, that employee's choice to decide if it's a safe work environment or a safe condition to get to the work.
I disagree. Not
so.
Okay.
Not a choice for me. Sorry, Todd.
But
I live close, so it doesn't matter.
So, given the fact that if we
I was thinking practically, what the construction evaluation resolution, I can't remember off the top of my head what the due date is for that.
That's the 31st.
End of the month.
Yeah.
So, practically speaking, practically, it's not there.
Right. Okay. So, we could do it next Tuesday during the day also. And, the resolutions that are on the agenda now are not time sensitive. They are, however, to gather everyone. I wanted really to be able to have everybody at one meeting and take care of this from a discussion standpoint. Okay, but yes, we can do the matrix, the CER resolution during the day on the 29th. So then that means.
And in fact, that's how Scoring County's done it for the last 16 years.
I understand that. So, other than the two subjects, we couldn't pull it out because I was in Detroit.
I wasn't implying, sorry, I didn't mean consent agenda or that. Board of Supervisors handled the CAFO resolution at its regular meeting.
At its regular meeting. Okay.
Forever.
All right. So, we take care of that next Tuesday. We then come to the point where both of you have resolutions. Do you want to continue to have a public meeting for the discussion of your resolution?
It's whether we have a separate meeting or not.
Correct. You know, looking at, you know, we can take care of what we're required to do next Tuesday morning. And not, I mean, you know, public members who want to come, but so then that would be a separate evening meeting for the two resolutions that are left that are from the two of you. All right, and then.
But let's be clear about my resolution. My resolution is simply a response to the request for a moratorium. Simply because I find incongruency between a resolution that starts with us saying we want to follow state law, and then a resolution that says no, we really don't want to follow state law. And so I'm not all that vested in my resolution. My resolution simply exists because I find inconsistencies between those
between the resolution that I think Story County has always passed and will pass, and the second one is proposed. And so I don't need mine unless that second resolution is something we're dealing with.
So, Supervisor Merkin, now, if we're to have the meeting, yes, I'm leaning toward let's do it tonight. I mean, now, it doesn't point out will be with the issue you raised with the staff. The other and the staff, per legal, says they do have the right to say no on choosing not to be there. And Shelley says, okay, she knew, she knows, but she's choosing to be there tonight. Correct? Yes, yeah, we're going to do it. So we are at the point then where public input on the resolution for the moratorium. Will there be the full ability for people to contribute at tonight, or is it better that you have a separate meeting, that we schedule a separate for that, which is a little unusual, and I'm thinking this out loud here, okay, so is everybody here with me a minute? We don't typically schedule a special meeting for, like, these types of things. They normally would be handled on a Tuesday morning, but with the CER is why I put them also as a night meeting, with, you know, saying this is your turn, this is your time for people to weigh in about whether we should even use it or not. I mean, that's what I
would say. So I struggle with that because I see the CER, Morrison, as something that Story County has done since the Master Matrix was passed, right? Story County has adopted it every single year, and I don't believe that there is anybody on either side of this that's going to suggest that it's not wise of Story County to pass the CER. And so then it becomes, well, we've always passed it in the past. I believe we're going to pass it this time. I wonder what's the impetus behind having public input for something that we always passed in the past and what I believe we're going to pass in the future? Now, I completely get why we would want to have a separate meeting and full public input on the second two resolutions. It just, this first one feels out of place to me since this is all the way back to Don Toms and Jane Halliburton and Wayne Clinton, that it's always been handled the same way and it's always had the exact same outcome. And I haven't heard anything yet that makes me think we're looking at a different outcome or we're even going to look at anybody pushing us for a different outcome.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think it was just for scheduling sake because I think people would be interested in that as would be interested in the other resolution.
And likely to provide the same input.
Yeah. So
right, but I'm not even just, I'm sorry, Linda. I was just going to say, you pointed out, Loris, that since I've been here until last year, we've always had that on consent. I mean, not only have we not had public input, we haven't even talked about it. It's just been a rubber stamp, no-brainer, we do this. And I get that people are interested in it, and we get the emails every year saying, yeah, yeah, please pass this, but we always do.
Right. So I hear what you're saying, and as I said, I afforded, discussion that because that's what we did 2 years ago. All right. But canceling of the discussion had to do to get everybody here, everybody in one meeting on that. So
change the order of the agenda items?
Today or tonight?
Tonight.
Okay. All right. And? Sure. We can change the order. Don't we change them all the time?
You can't add something new, but you can even modify what's proposed.
In the interest of getting, if we have the meeting tonight, in the interest of getting people home sooner, why don't we do the other two resolutions and do the CER last, and maybe even just state personally how we feel about the CER, so people don't spend a lot of time to do that, but if we could, so people don't spend an hour debating something which may be not needing that much.
I think it's an excellent solution to that, at least to move it about. We don't even, if we don't get to it, if somebody runs in and So if I can't get my car out, we're all stuck here. We'll do it next Tuesday. But so then the proposal would be, first of all, your proposal for the moratorium, and followed by Supervisor Sanders' reaffirmation proposal. So we could do that. That'll cut it down on time. You're right, we don't normally take comment. I once again put public comment on there if anybody wanted to talk specifically about the more about the matrix itself. That was my thinking, you know, if they just wanted to complain about the matrix itself as opposed to go into the discussion on the moratorium. But Shelley, what do you think about that as far as moving it along? You just have to move on, okay? All right, so we are looking at now still having it this evening, which means that staff can have the option of saying yes or no if they want to go. So we don't know what our staffing levels will be, but it would be tonight we go with number one, or number two on the agenda, we move to number one. Oh, I see Alyssa stepping up here.
I've got a question. We are having it located at another site.
Right.
As of right now, it sounded like they would allow us to have it there. I don't know what the city is, because they closed their
gate. Is gates all open?
They are. She did tell me they canceled all activities and everything, schools and everything. So they have passed, but I just want to make sure, I mean, if we use the facilities that's requiring for them to have their employees here to close the bathrooms. I can go ask. I just know at the time I called, she asked if I could let her know if you were postponing it, because I don't get everything.
And I go back, then this is off of Rick, the Supervisor Sanders. Trying to keep the formality here. Okay. So, because then if their employees, at least a couple, were putting at risk. So we're putting our employees at risk, or
our employees have the opportunity next. Our handbook says if they choose not to because of weather, then, you know, I don't think there's anything that you can say. Like, I would want to know what the expectation is of us as far as being there at 7 p.m. tonight if the weather turns a certain way. Personally, I'd like to get home to my family safe and sound. But if there's a meeting at 7 o'clock that we're asked to be at, we will do everything we possibly can to be there.
I'm going to check my schedule.
Yeah, I will call the city.
If you wouldn't mind. Sorry for everybody still sitting here, but I know you're kind of interested in what's going to happen. So, and I will just admit, you know, I've never had children, so I don't worry. I don't put the same concept there about I'm thinking about me. I'll think about my husband a little bit. Okay, you know. I don't put into the same concept about all of the concerns that everybody has. So, hi.
About
28
weeks.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So my concern would simply be from a perception point of view, if all government, all public entities are canceling things for tonight, and we host something that we expect a large public turnout at. Not saying anything would go wrong, but if something goes wrong, Loris, you were in the media. Tell me how that works.
Oh, okay. Eat us alive.
It looks like everything else is shut down.
Okay. So Tuesday night, we're checking on schedules for next Tuesday night.
The board considers, since the Presbyterian Church offers their services across the street, next Tuesday to have a regular scheduled meeting, but then have a clear time that the board would recess from here and readjourn over there. Just specific, it would be daytime hours, however.
Yeah.
But specifically to address the three items that are on tonight's agenda. What I will say, though, is I'm sure the Presbyterian Church, or even if it was the Methodist Church, which is relatively close, they would say that would be an option. However, if there was a funeral, we would be bumped.
Right.
The county would be bumped.
Yeah. Right. My other thought about that is part of the, all of the logistics with Gate Hall has to do with the sound system. And we're using their sound system, and they've got that mic. So
I can tell you, from Methodist Church, Methodist Church would be well prepared to provide adequate sound system. I have not been in the Presbyterian Church for a while. Paula, have you? I've been either. I know, Shelley, you and I can talk about the Methodist Church. I know the Methodist Church could handle it, the sound and the presentation.
And so you would only suggest that there were any accessibility issues.
Yeah.
It's all full accessible.
They're fully accessible.
Okay.
But I mean, that you would have to clearly communicate to the public on the agenda that there would be reasons at a certain point in time. Again, you're dealing with public, or Mother Nature again, too, and not knowing what would happen next week. But it would be at least during daytime hours, which then is the drawback then is receiving criticism that's during daytime hours. I'm just throwing that out.
Oh, there's no way to please everybody. I did figure that out pretty quickly. Okay.
And then when you do, you get the snowstorm.
That's right.
Yeah. I just want to pay homage to the pastor that did
it was
tonight. And
right. It was. Sure. Okay. So my schedule would accommodate Tuesday. Yeah, the one thing I am can be rearranged. So I can do Tuesday after the regular meeting, Tuesday at night, if you're available at night or after the regular meeting.
All of it.
I have a 5:30 meeting, but I could, you know, hold the names, but I could be here by 7. I just couldn't be here earlier.
Okay.
So,
what about during the day?
Yeah, so what if... Yeah, so what if we said 1 p.m., mm-hmm. and assume we're going to get through our full agenda by 1 p.m., I mean,
right. Yeah.
But if we don't, we take a recess from our regular agenda, go have that meeting at 1 p.m., and then come back, if we got any of this agenda,
right.
and come back out of recess for that. I really like that idea. I haven't been in either of these churches, but I like the idea of utilizing that. It seems like our best opportunity to try to accommodate everything as well as possible and not create any real or perceived jeopardy tonight.
Okay, got it.
And the forecast only goes until next Monday, and that gets pretty iffy, but it doesn't look like any heat show. But the sun's coming in.
I didn't get an answer. It's 12:30, so it might be fine. Okay. So the new one, while you and Deb were out of the room, and Leanne suggested that it could be a good solution if we can coordinate with the church, is that we would have our regular Tuesday meeting either finish by 1 o'clock or take a adjourn to go over to the church next door or the Methodist church down the street, which can accommodate a large crowd. And then come back if we have business to finish afterwards. But then the only thing we would lose is nighttime, you know. But otherwise, it sounds like it would match the sound system, the capacity issue, as long as the weather would hold us up. It would mean staff would not have to work overtime. Leanne, it's looking better and better. It's shining golden by the moment, okay? So the next step would be to contact, starting with the pastor next door or the Methodist. Okay.
So I would ask, we can't make a motion or anything. I would ask that our chair, that our chair cancel tonight's meeting and try to reschedule something for 1 p.m. next week, work with staff and work with whoever you need to get some scheduled for 1 p.m. And then I would further ask that if you want to, I think it's fair for people that want to attend this meeting to have an agenda that we're going to go by. And so if you want to rework the agenda and put it in a different order with different public comment lines, get that done as well.
And I will do that. I will accept that request.
So I've got 14 text messages to respond to. Are we canceling for tonight?
We are canceling for tonight. And so, actually, Leanne, Deb, you and Deb and I, whatever, we need to, I said we put it on the website. I had some people call, right? Let's get on the website first and get a memo out to the media because they wanted to know. I got a call from Robbie yesterday. From the tribune, I said, well, I really don't know that one yet, but okay, so let's get moving on those two to get it out. We'll all return those various messages we've gotten, And we'll see if we're rescheduling for next Tuesday night. Is that a plan?
Email staff.
Email staff. Oh, very good. Okay.
Next Tuesday afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon. All right. Tuesday. Yeah. Very good. Thank you for correcting me. Now, the next question is, are we going to let out early? Does anybody have an appetite for that? I mean, I'm just asking.
Typically, they call it confirmed. Doesn't the chair typically call and confer with the sheriff?
Okay, and I'm looking at the other shoe. Yeah, I understand the latest forecast is the snow's not coming until 5 o'clock, correct? So I'm not ready to call that yet. Everybody's already at work.
Yeah, so I would suggest that as a board member, I'm very willing for the chair in consultation with the sheriff and our emergency manager to make that call. And I would just encourage our chair to remember that we give our staff flexibility and we're pretty hesitant to make that call unless it's deemed safety necessary.
So then also, Alyssa, I heard you Deb earlier, you have some language that we set out if we're going to then stay open.
Yeah, I can. The chair typically sends it out. Yeah.
Okay, super. So I'm going to check in with emergency management and the sheriff again, and we'll take that from there. And thank you for all of the assistance. Okay. So anybody have any other pressing information they want to convey out right now? Meetings they've attended that have been great, wonderful.
Not impressive.
Thank you. Okay.
I would move to be adjourned.
Second. If everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Oh, and it looks like Jolene's has been rescheduled.
Yes, for Friday.
Okay.